once we decide that Purim is still part of the of our celebrations, the question is, what is and what is not suitable for Purim from our point of view, and especially from the musical point of view. That means, what should we incorporate in the Purim services, and in what way? To just make a kind of an introduction to that. In the past, various communities used the prayers of Purim to channel some kind of, or to make it some kind of a security valve. That means that there were all sorts of things done in the Purim services which were not permitted during other services. And that served as an outlet for people to show some kind of irreverence to certain aspects of the services, certain aspects of history, certain aspects of Judaism, and so on. So there were all sorts of things being done in the Purim services. To mention a few. First of all, the music was changed. In other words, if you take the Purim services, these are weekday services. They are not in any way or shape any kind of holiday. Purim is not considered a holiday, a festival, because it's not in the Torah. It's considered a minor festival, but it, halachically, it is a weekday. And the services are weekday services, so the Nusach was supposed to be the Nusach of the weekday, and that's what people did. But they allowed themselves to insert into the Nusach all sorts of references to other services in a comical way. Like to make fun of Rosh Hashanah service, like make fun of Yom Kippur service, or even Pesach service, make some kind of references to these services, but in a comical way. And that was comparable to the disguise. In other words, Purim, there is a tradition that you disguise yourself. So the prayers themselves disguise themselves into something else. From the musical point of view, they disguise themselves to Yom Kippur and things like that. And people used to perform the service where they had the section of Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah with a mock seriousness. I mean, everybody knew it was not serious, but it was a kind of a quasi seriousness that you would have on Yom Kippur. And people used to make verbal or how should I say, word plays on these things. Why is Kippurim like Purim? Like Purim, and if you add to it a kaf is like something. Yeah? Kemo something. Kemoshe. Okay? Kemoshe. Kippurim. That means there is an element there that Purim should be Yom Kippur is like Purim, or Purim like Yom Kippur. So there are various ways of interpreting that. One way is about the disguises. You know, people used to disguise themselves to all sorts of princes and all sorts of characters from the surrounding, from the goyim around them. And it used they used to say that on Purim the Jews disguised themselves to goyim, but on Yom Kippur the goyishe Jews disguised themselves as Jews. So that is one way of doing it. In Hasidic in Hasidic law, they took it very seriously, and they said that the Purim is just the other side of Yom Kippur. So there is a kind of an atonement in the in Purim itself by doing all those comedies, by being very very happy or very even intoxicated. There is a mitzvah there, which is a somehow taking the other end of the Jewish life and making that an atonement. Part of it has to do with the Hasidic idea that you have to be always besimcha, in a state of happiness or joy, a state of joy. Well, what holiday do you have? It is a complete state of joy in Purim. Therefore, Purim has this kind of value, just as over against Yom Kippur, which is the epitome of or the height of seriousness. So, therefore, this kind of thing produced lots and lots of liturgical things. One of the as I mentioned, was an imitation of prayers, like they would do a Hashkivenu in style of in a mock style of high holidays. They would sing the Baruch Hu in Rosh Hashanah style, and so on. So that's one thing, and of course people would laugh because that's not the right time to do a Rosh Hashanah service on Purim. So in addition to that, there were texts that were composed for Purim and were part of the service. One of the texts, or one kind of the text, was a Purim sermon, a Dvar Torah. And in Yiddish it's called Purim Torah, the Torah of Purim. And that was usually not delivered by the rabbi, but by one of the congregants, or one of, usually in a yeshiva, one of the students of the yeshiva, who would poke fun at the sermons. And show how, say, they are inflated with too much high words, and so on and so forth. Or we would poke fun of the way that the rabbi is giving the sermon. And the idea was to make it like a midrash, and take out all sorts of verses out of context, in order to show how important Purim is. And there were all sorts of ways of doing that. In addition to that, in some Sephardic congregations, they used to have a kiddush for Purim, a special kiddush for Purim. Usually what you would do, for kiddush, you say Borei Pri HaGafen. After that, you would go into a bracha that explains the value of this holiday. In the mock kiddush, you didn't want to say the Borei Pri HaGafen and then have this Purim kiddush, but you would say that Purim kiddush, and then as if separately you say Borei Pri HaGafen and drink wine. So it doesn't look exactly like a kiddush, but the text of the kiddush was usually a whole string of verses which were combined by association. For instance, just to invent something, if you start with a text like a text that we are using, Baruch she ברוך שאמר והיה העולם כולו גשר צר מאוד. Okay? Things like that. You would have all sorts of texts which are totally unrelated but are associated by a string. And this harangue just could go for a long time, and clever kiddushim, we have clever kiddushim like that from various historical periods, and usually they introduce all sorts of satirical sentences about, say, the heads of the kahal, the heads of the community, or the rabbis, or the cantors, or the leaders of the congregations, the rich people, etc., etc. So that was also in introduced towards the end of the service. Another thing was the Purim Spiel, but the Purim Spiel was not part of the service. Purim Spiel is a kind of a comedy, or actually a theatrical piece that people used to present on Purim. And usually these are stories from the Bible in a kind of a rather primitive theatrical settings. And these were not done during the services, but the Purim Spielers would go from one house to another and present that that play during the feast. That means during the obligatory meal of Purim. There is in Purim during, say, the early afternoon, you're supposed to have a very festive meal, and this was the occasion of the Purim Spiel. Why do I bring up the Purim Spiel in that context of service? Because in America, gradually the Purim Spiels were introduced into the services themselves, and now in America they replace the services. In other words, you have a Purim Spiel, you come to the synagogue usually dressed in customs and so on, and then instead of having a service, they have a Purim Spiel, which usually is based on some kind of a musical comedy from say like The Man of La Mancha, I don't know what, all sorts of musicals, or not necessarily comedies, but they're made into comedies with all sorts of mock texts and so on and so forth, and that becomes part of the service. Now, here is where I bring up the question: what should there be in the Purim services of the Dutch liberal community? That, first of all, depends on the tradition. What did people do? What had people done until now in the services? So I need your help in that. What is customary for a Purim service in the Dutch communities?
Different
tune.
So actually, from a textual point of view, it's exactly the same text as the Maariv service,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
There are no additions, no. Whenever there is Shacharit, are there many Shacharit services for Purim in the Dutch liberal communities?
Some.
Only in Eger. Yeah, we've done it a few times in Amsterdam also, but it didn't quite work.
No.
So let's concentrate first on the Maariv service on Purim. And the question is, what do people usually do? You say that they disguise the service in different melodies.
Yeah.
What kind of different melodies?
It is not a very old tradition. This is something which actually I started in Amsterdam.
You're the culprit.
Yeah, I'm the culprit who brought that in. And Paolo Gori never wanted to do it. Laszlo was the first one who started doing it. Avery was the one who really brought into the art. but that's also because of his theatrical background and really dressing up. Yeah, the most successful was Teletubbies.
Yes,
that's right.
Yeah.
We've done Smurfy in Rotterdam. But Avery also made a real work of getting the music, and it was taken from all kinds of musicals and all kinds of things. And you never knew what he was going to do. But people were very upset at the beginning. Some were. And I'm reading the Kaddish with a good American accent. It took a while to get used to it.
Now, please understand that your tradition comes from, as we always say, from the German tradition. Now, in Germany, you would not dare do such things. I mean, the service of maybe a kind of a musical joke would be snuck in the service, but not more than that. You would not dare do it. So that, therefore, this is a revolution from the point of view of the that where the tradition comes.
I told you about the when I first got to England. This was also didn't happen in Sweden. Sweden was also like Germany. Purim, if it was there at all, was a children's party. We came to England, went to the West London Synagogue, the great main church of the English Reform.
Cathedral.
Yeah, the cathedral, and they mentioned Haman, and we started. Also, they walk in their high hats and striped trousers and the Sefer Torah and three children with the flags, marching off with them very, very, very carefully. It has changed, but in those days.
So again, I'm bringing up the question again. So what is? So you said that, as far as I understand, the Nusach was not changed. In other words, it was not changed. In other words, you didn't have
the
Nusach
texture,
in disguise.
No, the texture.
Yes, I disguised it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The music, not the text.
The music, yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but Brahms, could you tell us more about that?
Yeah.
For Nusach, I use Anipurim, for instance.
So you take Anipurim, the melody, Anipurim, something. And you use it, and you intertwine it into the Mariv service. Yeah.
For the part where, say, for instance, the Brachot after the Umavi Yom.
Oh, I see. So when it comes to Umavi Yom or Kihem Chayenu Vohimenu, these places you use Anipurim as a melody. And people recognize it as a Purim melody. So that's why it has an effect. Otherwise, it would not have an effect.
You can also have try it with Chanukah on Purim and see what happens.
some of you know the difference.
Some would actually sing
along. Nava, excuse me. Yeah. Nava, you want to say something?
Yeah, can you put, for example, this to pass here? Tom wasn't there to read the Nusach of the Megillah. So we read the Megillah a little bit, some people read it in Dutch, and some people read it in Hebrew, and then I improvised in the Megillah itself all kind of Shirei Purim, or the music, things from the musicals, repeated. It was just, I just improvised on the spot, yeah, because we didn't have the...
I laughed a lot about you.
Okay. Now here.
I was there.
Oh, you were there?
I was just standing next to you.
Oh yeah, right. Moshe wasn't there.
Ah.
We looked like each other.
He wasn't. He wasn't.
price for what was this guy was Moshe. What Moshe was this guy.
That's why you survived, yes?
Okay. Let's go on. So you use a melody that people recognize as part of Purim as a children's song. How far? And you take musicals, music from musicals,
sound of music,
or any other thing,
children's
and you
songs,
incorporate
children's songs and whatever,
or children's songs. And you use them in the Now is another question that I want to bring up, and that is also I would say a bit problematic, and it's the following. At the Hebrew Union College in Jerusalem, the students have developed a kind of a custom by which they change the texts of the prayer. In other words, they would have all the elements of the, say, first bracha, second bracha before the Shema, the bracha of the Ashkiveinu, etc. They would have everything there, but they change the text in English, usually not in Hebrew. They change the text and they put in some hints, sometimes local jokes and things of that nature. I'm not very happy with it, I must say, and neither are people who come from the outside and have to hear these jokes and they don't understand what's going on. Well, the students are all bursting in laughter from, you know, after every minute. So I'm not for such a thing, and I don't think that would be an acceptable thing for the for your congregations. I don't know, but that's what I would guess. But to have one spot like this kind of kiddush as a as an outlet could not be a bad idea, or to have a mock sermon, something like that, or say one spot in the service, not the entire service, but one spot in the service which is not which doesn't ruin the regular structure of the service, like the brachot before Shema, the Shema, etc., the Amidah. These would remain intact, but say you could insert a piece like that, say before Aleinu Lishabeach, or say for Yehul Ratzon, before Yehul Ratzon, something of a humorous nature, and could be also something of a musically humorous nature that can be done. And I think that there's a, so what's the opinion about that, David? What do you think about it? Yeah.
On Purim, I'm open to many things, except making fun of the rabbi, of course. unless it's me making fun of a colleague. it's interesting because we haven't developed any further than the getting people to dress up, which now that never happened before, but now there are at least some people who do it, and not everybody as Queen Esther.
No, but more than before you came.
Well, yes.
Before you came to Rotterdam, it was more like German style. Nobody dressed up because no.
I don't feel comfortable
since you came.
But I like to see nice costumes with a lot of people, but I don't feel comfortable. No.
Okay, that's a personal matter, but the question is the communal, not personal.
It's happening more and more. It happens more, and people got used to all the musical jokes also. There isn't really. It does work as a joke sometimes when you have funny melodies or recognizable things. You were singing this Feyenoord song in Rotterdam, yes.
For a long time. Yes, it worked. Adon Olam Hashem Allah Adon.
The local folk football club, song, yes.
For instance,
yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Adon Olam lends itself to every kind
or,
of.
Or the Smurfs song. If you, the Smurfs song does it.
Yeah. If you do a Karasik Yabal on New York, New York, it works perfectly well, and everybody dances in the synagogue. Yeah, it's great fun. Amsterdam Zachacht is great for tourists of Amsterdam. You know, these things also. Yes.
So I think that would be the
are there limits on this?
Good, that's the question.
Are there limits? What can you do? What can you not do? I mean, I wouldn't start with Silent Night, you know. For example.
It was actually one of the suggestions that I had for, you know, when. Friday evening, the 24th of December.
We have done Auld Lang Syne on the 31st of December for Adon Olam.
Yeah, but that's not a religious Christian.
No, that's right. And we and our cousin chickened out at the last moment of singing Adon Olam on the 1st of May on the International.
But let's go over the first no-no that I would say is to use Christian tunes which have some religious meanings. I would not do that, and because of two things. Number one, I don't see any reason why one should use them in such a way. And because they have some sacred connotation with other people, and if you do them in such a way, it becomes a mocking thing for other people. And that I would really.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas is written by a Jew.
So yeah, but no, but it's not. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas is not a religious song. It's not a religious song. It's not a religious song. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. It's a very much a kind of a Broadway, Broadway song about Christmas, and it's. I would not. But Silent Night I would not use. Silent Night is a religious. Or Adeste Fidelis. Or Ave Maria, or any kind of songs which have
Amazing Grace. It's also a religious song.
Yeah,
yes.
It's
a Christian.
What is
the Christian
song?
Amazing Grace.
It has some sacredness about it, and people used it, for instance, in the last great disaster, and that is during the November. What is it? The 9th of November. The commemorations of the.
Kristallnacht.
Yeah. 9th of November? No, not Kristallnacht. Not the 9th of November. What am I saying? The 9/11, what they call it.
Oh yeah, 11.
Yeah, right.
November.
Yeah.
So 11th of September.
11. Yeah. All right. So I'm sorry. But 9/11 is Kristallnacht. That's a different story. Yeah. But so people have many of the policemen and the firemen who were killed were memorialized with Amazing Grace. It became, they really had the bagpipe bands playing Amazing Grace, and became a very important religious thing. Therefore, I would not use that in such occasions.
Schindler's List is a very nice melody. Will you use that?
No.
It's a
Burma. I would never do that.
We talk about limits. Where do you draw the line?
But it's not funny. And we're talking about funny things for touring.
No, but it's just you can use it.
You could take a serious melody and mock it. Make it sound funny. That you could do.
Change the tempo, make some syncopes in there. And
the
horse that will be beat?
Sorry?
The horse. I don't think I would use it either.
The other things that I would not do is anything which is related.
If you can use Frank Sinatra, you can use Bauer also.
Just
a minute. She had a poor service, and she used the German old folk songs for the service, which are completely taboo, so it's nationalistic. I don't use that. But she had her Russian folk songs, so in Russia they used Russian folk songs, so she thought, I do the same in German, I use German folk songs, and it was a complete disaster. And she came, I don't know, what have I done wrong? But it's just the example that melodies can go completely
they are RAF pilots in the war were singing alles über Deutschland
when they let the bombs fall, huh? Alles über Deutschland.
But in the Netherlands, the folk songs that were used in the Netherlands is the same as the States. I don't know if it's the same in Germany. The folk songs that were used in the 19th century were taken in church.
Melodies have an effect. So yeah. If you play melodies, it's not funny for. So it could be.
Yeah, you're very sensitive for that.
Yeah.
But then you were
against
the way you handle it,
But we're very careful. Some people can be offended by some melodies, and one has to be very careful about that. If you take, for instance, Eastern European folk songs, which by themselves are nothing really, you could use them anytime in poem and can be done very successfully. For some people, they have a connotation with the Shoah. And you have to be very careful when you use such things.
The associations are very important because I remember in my early days, a shaliach from Habonim who brought in an American play, which the Habonim was going to do. And it was all built on gefilte fish. So we said, funny, but in Holland, you build it on perekugel. Mm-hmm. Right? Then it's funny. And he said, no, this is gefilte fish, we have gefilte fish. So they did a thing on gefilte fish. Nobody understood anything. Well, in Holland, who knows gefilte fish in Holland? You know? Oh, you may, yes. But you need something which is very typical Dutch to have the same thing. Association is so important.
Yeah. Another problem is from my experience when people use melodies like that is repetition. When you have a text like Adon Olam, then the repetition is built by the fact that you have many verses, and so you can repeat the melody many times, but people get enamored in a melody if you are using it in in a Michamocha. Once they become enamored with a melody, you have to repeat it time and again, and then it becomes a nuisance. And so you have to be very careful not to repeat melodies too many times when you're using a melody like that, and when you're using a melody which has verses in it and you use it for prose texts, it sometimes becomes ridiculous because the prose doesn't coincide with the melody. So that can be a very nice effect in itself as a Purim effect. When you have things that don't really coordinate. In many congregations they sing every Shabbat a Purim song, which is Shiru Ladonai Shir Hadash, Shiru Ladonai, which the words don't coincide with the melody, and towards the end of the chapter, the end of the psalm, what you have to do is add la 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 la, because it doesn't work. So that can be a Purim effect, but you have to know how to use that kind of melody. Now, in addition to these, there is another set of melodies that can be used effectively, although it doesn't produce very much comedy, but it produces the atmosphere. And that is that in certain verses of the Megillah, if you read it in Hebrew, then you are allowed or encouraged even to insert various melodies into that text. And that's unlike everything else that you read during the year. In other words, if you read a Torah text, you're supposed to do it exactly according to the Tamim. There are no way of changing that. There are rules about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, what you do with the melodies and so on. And the same thing with the Haftarah and other Megillot when you read them. But when you read the Megillat Esther, there are places in the Megillah that there are traditional melodies that are not part of the Tamim, and they are inserted into the Megillah. A very famous place is Vayitlu et Haman al Haetz Asher Asher Asa leMordechai. They hung Haman on the tree, on the actual gallows that he prepared for Mordechai. And the melody that was used in Germany, and I understand also in Holland, is Tom pa pa da da di da 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 tom tom tom. Which is taken from where? Where is it taken from? It is taken from the wedding service, from the Sheva Brachot. Yeah. Kol sason vekol simcha, kol chatan vekol kala. Okay, that is where it is taken from. And the idea was to associate the great joy that we have while Haman is hanging on the tree. So I'm not sure it's very humanistic to think about it like that, but Jews on that occasion were not thinking too much about humanism, but more about the revenge that they had in Haman. So that became a standard melody like that for the Vayitlu et Haman. Of course, there is always this story about a woman who goes with a daughter next to the synagogue and hears Vayitlu et Haman, they hung Haman with a melody of Kol Sason veKol Simcha, and she says to her daughter, "May it be soon with you." So there are melodies like that. There are, in the 19th century, they inserted choral pieces for various places in the Megillah. Especially when Mordechai is mentioned in his glory. Towards the end of the Megillah, Mordechai is crowned and he becomes the viceroy of Persia, etc. And so there were all sorts of choral pieces that were sung to that. There is the Zulzer setting of that, there is Naumburg, there is Lewandowski, and there are all sorts of them. And if during the Megillah, you can sing some of these melodies, that could be very very nice and has a tremendous effect on the congregation if you do that. It's all in, you can find it in the Zulzer books and so on. during the Megillah, oh no, what's happening? Too much cheese today, you know. you could use these songs, and then after the Megillah, it is customary to sing Shoshanat Yaakov, and one can use many melodies for this. How do you people sing Shoshanat Yaakov? Do you have a melody? Okay, no, I heard already.
I did it once on
the
pirate in the Pirates of the Caribbean. It really fits well tonight.
Okay. But there are some traditional melodies too for that. Now, there's one Israeli melody. Shoshanat Yaakov, Zahala Vesamecha. בירותם יחר, תלת מרדכי, תשועתם, היית לנצח, תקוותם, בכל דוב הדור, ברוך מרדכי הלאומי, ברוך מרדכי הלאומי. Of course, in the Israeli melody, that's a modern melody. So, Shoshanat Yaakov has two verses. One is, Arur Haman, אשר ביקש לאבדי, Baruch Mordechai Yehudi. So the curse about Haman was taken out, and you have only Baruch Mordechai Yehudi. And then there are other melodies like Shoshanat. Okay, so you can use Shoshanat Yaakov as a song, or you can do what Tom did, and that is to use Shoshanat Yaakov with a different melody. And what I would suggest is that you could sing it twice, once with a traditional melody, either the Israeli melody or any other traditional melody, and then do some kind of fun thing with it. So actually, we can sum up what can be done. First of all, melodies in disguise. That means you're singing according to different nusach, like Baruch Hu according to High Holy Days or any other thing like that. Ahavat Olam according to a melody from Pesach, and so on and so forth. Then another way of doing it is to take a melody, a known melody, a Purim melody, like Ani Purim in this case, or some other songs of Purim, and there are quite a few of them, and to insert them in the service. One of the songs that people like to sing today is Laihudim. Hayta ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. Laihudim, laihudim, hayta ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. Laihudim, laihudim, hayta ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. It's a melody. Do you know another melody for laihudim? Ora v'simcha, ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. Can insert it as part of the prayer. So that is another way of doing it. Then, borrowing from musicals or any other kind of melodies that people know, with one big exception, and that is religious melodies of other religions, or melodies that may have associations that could be detrimental. One can. I don't know. I would be very careful about this this thing, because it may hurt some people, and I won't go into that.
You wouldn't like in the carnivals that they would use a colloidal melody for carnival song.
Yeah. I would be very careful about these things.
Yeah, my song would be hard to understand. It's hard. They only say hard.
You come more than that.
So, in addition, one can use, as I said, you know, all sorts of melodies during the Megillah, but choose them well and know why you're choosing them. Or you can use some of the choir pieces that were written in the 19th century. Some of them are very, really very nice. Some of them are too official, too hi-hat kind of music, but can, they can be used. And songs before and after the Megillah. But also we talked about inserting pieces that have some kind of fun about the community or things like that at certain points of the service without disturbing the service itself, but to put them either, say, before Baruch Hu, you could do something. You could do something before Yu L'Ratzon. You could have another one after the reading of the Megillah and before Aleinu, or either before the reading of the Megillah and after reading the Megillah at the end of the service. You could do that.
So read the Megillah.
Yeah.
It was if it's prone that it's not like the Sefer Torah, it's only one page.
Right.
And that you have this whole bunch of paper from kilometers over there. Or you scroll it a little bit,
okay,
like this. But you should fold it like a letter in four parts, but
not necessarily four parts, but you have to fold it like a letter.
Crying about this old
Let me say about the minhag is to fold it like a letter, and that means that it's folded like this way. There is
you take it out completely and then fold it.
Right, you take it out completely and then you fold it. That is the custom. However, from experience, I can tell you that can ruin a Megillah.
Yeah.
Therefore, although it's a very nice custom, I don't do that.
What do you do?
Just read it out of the Megillah and fold it out little by little, and then roll it.
You roll it.
Yeah.
You just roll it.
Yeah. You roll it in
like I say for a Torah. You roll it up as you go along.
Yeah.
And
no. You don't need one. Yeah. It rolls anyway.
We have had a very beautiful Megillah. We have had a very beautifully, wonderfully written Megillah, which was ruined by this kind of minhag, and therefore I'm very careful about that.
Yeah, but you're touching the parchment with your finger then, yeah.
The parchment?
Okay. Yeah, you have to... A little bit, but you tried not to to overdo.
You don't teach the text.
There are some congregations that they read the Megillah with a yad, like in the Torah, and that could be advisable on one condition that you don't you know, kind of scratch the entire thing. Now, I don't know from the point of view of Megillah reading, how much in your congregations of the Megillah is read in Hebrew, how much is read in Dutch. What are the minhagim about that?
Mostly read in Dutch. I wrote
mostly read in Dutch. But do you read the entire Megillah or part of it?
No, entire. Read the entire Megillah. And I would say about 20% is read in Hebrew.
In Hebrew, the beginning and the end or something like that?
Beginning, the end, and little pieces in between to keep it. And then, but you have, so that in Dutch you can follow the whole story.
In the Hague we read it completely only in Hebrew.
You read the Megillah twice?
Oh yes. Entirely in Hebrew, entirely in.
Let me tell you about repeating the Megillah.
It's a constant beginning, yeah.
It's very constant beginning. Very constant beginning.
But that's what you did this year.
Yeah.
Because you can read very fast. Because Moshe only reads the first three psukim and the last three psukim, and then it's done in Dutch.
Ah, that could be. But this year we did. I read the chapter, and then somebody read the same chapter in Dutch. And
For you, you were busy.
Let me tell you about any time. Let me tell you about an Italian custom. The Italian customs of the Jews of Rome is that means not only in Rome but the Jews who follow the Minhag of Rome is that the Chazan stops after each verse and the Kahal repeats the end of the verse. Each verse. Yeah. The very end of the verse is repeated by the congregation.
And
let me tell you that in Jerusalem, people flock to hear that. It's packed. The synagogue is packed to hear that kind of a minhag. People love it. People, I will not recommend it because it makes the Megillah so long. The Megillah is long enough as it, as it is. So
that make people listen.
No, people are very alert and they want to show their kind of participation in the